Hello, everybody. Jam Rutherford here. Hello, everybody. Jam Rutherford here. We're having a few technical difficulties today from Self-Reliant Leadership. And today I'm super pleased that I've got a very, very special guest and a fellow LinkedIn Learning instructor, Tatiana Kolovou.
Got it.
Did I get it right?
Yeah.
Okay. Well done. My apologies to you for the technical difficulties. My apologies to our live audience. But I'm thrilled to have you. We've been talking for a while. We have, I think, all kinds of things in common. Tell, for those of the people that don't know you by chance, let us know a little bit about your background.
Sure. Jan, first, thank you so much for extending the invitation for me to join you in the LinkedIn Live. I've been nervous about it on the technical side, and you've proven to me that I need to have some serious hand-holding if I ever do it on my own. So thank you for jumping through the hoops. My name is Tatiana Kolovou. I come coming to you live from Bloomington, Indiana, originally from Athens, Greece. That's my hometown. That's where my heart is. But I work and live in Bloomington, Indiana. I teach at Indiana University, the Kelly School of Business. I teach MBA students, undergraduate students. My focus is business communication, cross-cultural communication, definitely persuasion, and anything that has to do with us being able to show up and get work done in a positive way as we communicate. However, where you and I have connected is in the topic of resilience and leadership as it relates to more physical and mind-body engagement and how we overcome obstacles and what we learn from pushing ourselves, from stretching ourselves at times, and what we learn when we experiment with the outdoors and being with other people in those scenarios. So that's where our conversations have been. So I'm happy and thrilled to be with you today.
Yeah. Here's a note from somebody. It's a LinkedIn user. Is that something
Yasu,
in Greek?
Yeah, that says hello, Yasu. Yasu, well, LinkedIn user, thanks for joining in. Yes.
Yeah, so you've got some fans out there. And I'm just curious, how many courses do you have out on LinkedIn Learning?
I think I'm working on two more for this year, but I think about 15. I lose track a little bit.
Wow.
I have several with my colleague, Brenda Bailey Hughes. She is a dear friend and colleague. We do a lot on communication together. And then I touch upon the topics of cross-cultural communication and resilience, and then several communication courses. The latest one was on designing an authentic pitch and having impromptu conversations. You know, the ones where you see somebody you want to talk to and you don't know what to say. I kind of walk you through that.
Yeah. There's a dear friend of mine named Deborah Fine, and she wrote a book called The Small Art of Fine. The Fine Art of Small. Mm-hmm. Do you know Deborah?
I've heard of the book, yes. I don't know her, but it's definitely a good read and right along the lines of what we're talking about. Yeah.
Yeah. So you grew up in Greece,
mm-hmm.
and I'm wondering, you know, what life experience most shaped your life?
You're getting personal fast. I'd say the death of my father when I was seven. You know, as a parent now, I realize how fundamental your early years are when you grow up and being around a family. And there's, in the US, I've met many people that have very different types of family formations, but Greece is a smaller country and there's usually a mom and dad and there's a family unit. Where I grew up, my dad was a chemical engineer and he had studied in Germany and he was in the world of business running the part of the an American company in the US, and he died very abruptly of a fast-growing brain tumor, what we know now to be glioblastoma. But because my mom was a stay-at-home mom with the kids and he was the breadwinner in those days, and it was 1974, we were completely discombobulated. We lived in a nice house in the suburbs. We had to move in a cramped 2-bedroom, 1-bathroom apartment. And my world literally turned upside down. And death is kind of a taboo in our culture. That's not dealt. There's no celebrations of life. Let's put it this way. When people die, the wakes and the funerals are very, very difficult. We never went to it as children. So I didn't have much closure, and it was definitely, I would say, the most impactful event in my life.
Wow. Well, I did that inform your interest in resilience as an adult later on? Do you think that had something to do with developing that expertise?
You know, I've done a lot of soul searching of figuring, you know, where do you find the strength to bounce back? Because I saw my mom deal with this very differently than others may have. And I realized that we all have our own ways of dealing with adversity. Interestingly enough, 5 years later, I had a very, very serious back fusion surgery. And I had it done in England because my mother was a British citizen. So that also was another transformative experience when you're very active at that age where you're growing and changing. And they say to you, not only can you not be in sport, but you end up in a wheelchair going to the airport to go and have surgery in a different country. So again, my life changed. And I learned that I had to recover or bounce back from that adversity of not being able to do what I wanted to. And maybe that made me a little bit more willful and stubborn in a way. But I became very aware of how self-aware you have to be about your own ability to deal with situations, and then developed a really strong set of tools that I could use. I do say that being in sport at a young age because of that surgery allowed me to learn more about my physical and mental self, of being able to use that. And that's where we connect to be more resilient.
You know, it's funny. We're going to talk about, you know, you signed up, you know, we signed up for a 5K that turned into an ultra marathon. So we're going to talk about, you know, how your view on sports led to all this. It was interesting today. I was talking to a world-class athlete that I have the privilege of working with. And I was talking to him and I said, you know, in the big scheme of things, I mean, you could look at your business as coaching, you know, coaching athletes. But I said, I kind of think that what you're really doing is you're helping people figure out who they really are, you know, as an athlete. So, I don't know, interesting.
It's related, Jan, if I can say, I really see the whole continuum of performance. You could be training an athlete to perform better in a sport, training an executive to do better in a speech, or have them deal with a difficult situation, or a student to build the courage to get up and speak in front of a large group. Or these environments and situations are very similar. And to me, again, it's the same continuum. My first degree is in exercise physiology. So there's a lot that I think crosses over into the world of business too. And seeing us as athletes of life, and we train and being better in our performance.
Yeah. Well, you wrote this article about a month ago, you know, signed up for a 5K, turned into an ultra marathon, and you offered up 5 tips for building resilience. Are these the same tips that you offer in the LinkedIn Learning course on building resilience? Are they different?
Yeah, they're different. I designed that course in 2014, and it was in a studio where we really had to be resilient. There were airplanes flying over, and we'd have to stop because you could hear it, because it was a new studio. So there was just a lot of adversity that we dealt with. It was quite interesting. You couldn't have planned it. But then, so it's an older course, and I approached it from the standpoint of, look, the adverse effect is going to happen. And I'm talking about stuff that happens in the work world. I don't want to deal with examples like my father's or even my surgery. So we stayed in the world of work and talked about adversity and difficult situations. So two things, just like if you consider a race or a sporting event that stretches you, being that central event, here are things you can do to prepare to be stronger when that happens. And then when it does happen, because we can't control that, here are things that you can do afterwards, just like you do in an event. You write your post event race plan, you reflect, you think about what happened, how can you do it differently next time. So that was my approach in the course. But this article that I wrote in the newsletter had sort of some fresher things, because I do think that what happened in 2020 has turned into an ultra marathon that we all said it's going to be a couple of weeks, but that stretched out quite a lot, right?
Yeah. Well, I want to go on record. In February of 2020, I told everyone 24 months.
Oh, well, yeah. Well, you know, you were quite wise. I quickly had to do the same, because I run a small business and we had to make some really tremendously courageous pivoting plans, but we didn't have an option. And eventually I thought, yeah, let's kind of go for the long haul. And I'm glad that I did because of that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, let's go through those five tips. Sure. The first one, reach the next aid station.
Yeah. So, you know, we enter an event where we think, just like we did in March 2020, that maybe by the summer this will all go away. And there we were a year later. Instead of it being a short event, it's an ultra marathon. So I looked to see what are the things that athletes do in these long events. What is their mindset and what can we learn from that? And so the first one was look for the next aid station, because in long events, I've done triathlons and a marathon, just one marathon I was allowed to do, and other shorter events, half marathons. But you look to the next aid station and you're sort of pacing yourself and checking and seeing sort of what's happening and how are you feeling. So that's a strategy that we use a lot in running. And I have this written down. It has a lot to do with pacing, to think if this is going to be a long stretch, look at your calendar and decide where's the peak and where can you catch your breath and what does tomorrow look like? Because if we can plan for that a little bit, I think we can be a little stronger facing that adversity.
Yeah. Yeah. And you talk about the next measurable win. That's one of the things you mentioned.
What's the next win? Or what does a good win look like? Or do we even need, or is good enough enough? If there's one thing that this year has taught all of us, is to not to seek perfection, is to be content with good enough, because it's so easy to burn out and it's so easy to feel depleted that you really have to pace yourself. And there's a lot of research in sports psychology. My husband is one and he's doing the research on that, on pacing yourself. So I really think that the analogy of that is really important. And we can do that in the work world with our calendars or our lives in general.
Well, you know, the whole idea of pace, I see it when I lead the expeditions that I go on every summer. We'll put someone in charge in the front. Doesn't matter what fitness level, whoever is in front will go too fast. Mm-hmm. And eventually, inevitably, they'll turn around and say, everybody's stretched out. And then they'll say, I do that at work, don't I? I'm oblivious. And it's like, well, you know what? We might not be able to decide the direction. You know, we've got to move from point A to point B. We've got to, you know, hit this number in this quarter, but we can't go 90 miles an hour all the time. That we know. Mm-hmm. And we got to figure out, you know, how do we get the whole team, you know, to the top all together, you know, where they're actually willing to go to the next summit.
Yep.
You know, versus I'm done, because the business world, there's no, you know, there's no finish line. There's, you know,
it's all what I call high intensity interval training. You push, you recover, you push, you recover, but you have to do it enough to know about it. Cause all of us the first time are not going to pace ourselves well enough. So it's being self-aware enough that we are in the race, in the push, in the set, in the path. We have that experience and next time we can do it better. And it's that self-awareness that helps us be, I think, more present and understanding of how to do it better and how to be wiser.
Naturally, we're hitting on the second point, which is check your rate of perceived exertion. And, you know, you mentioned, you know, to review your schedule for the coming day.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, shouldn't that be the coming week, coming month, coming quarter?
Yes, year, absolutely. If I could turn this camera around or show him my trash can. I mean, post-it notes. I constantly am a very much a visual learner, so I can post things that I can see and be reminded of looking ahead. It's sort of like driving and looking at your GPS of where are we ahead. And that makes me think that I can pace myself a little more. Again, you know, the same analogy, you don't want to be looking in your rearview mirror all the time. If there's something that you can do differently, it's really on ahead of you and you can do something a little better. So that pacing, I think, is really important. And it goes beyond the work world, by the way. You know, taking care of yourself is important as well, physically.
Yeah. Well, isn't that analogous, you know, you putting all these visual reminders is control what you can control?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean,
So, I mean, by seeing all that, you're reminding yourself, what can I control? What can I control? And a lot of that has to do with where you exert your time and effort.
Right? Yeah. Or I have this coming up. I better say no to this request, or I need to tell them that I can't take this on, or let's postpone, or just did this today. Can we move the call again? Because I can't give you my full attention. If I don't have the visual and I'm not allowed to able to pace myself, I probably will be burning out much faster. I'll be the leader in the front running too fast and looking behind and I'm all alone.
Well, your third point is make a fueling and hydration plan.
Yeah.
So how does that relate to the business world?
Well, when you are in any kind of long distance fitness event, whether it's, you know, swimming in a long distance race in a lake or in a canoe or in a hike, first of all, you have to have good nutrition because you're burning a lot of energy and calories. And it's the same, really. There's no analogy there. It's really we live and we have to fuel ourselves well. I was very glad that in the beginning of the pandemic, I saw a naturopath. I don't really like taking medications, but I do believe that there are certain substances that we can't take in our body. So we have to make an effort with supplements and vitamins. And I paid close attention to, had a full, you know, 74.5 point blood work done because I knew we were going into, or maybe a year ago this time, it was evident that this was going to be for the long haul. So I knew, wanted to keep track of, you know, vitamin D and where that was, or make sure that, blood work was clear and enough, and then eating accordingly. Because if you don't, and if you just get by with a bar here and a banana here, you and I know that doesn't last for long.
No. And, you know, I just read the other day, I think the average person in this country has gained 26 pounds over the past year.
I believe it.
Yeah. And I talked to a client today who said he gained 35.
Yeah.
And, you know, he doesn't feel good about it. Now he's got to work doubly hard to get it off. So
well, we're sitting a lot more than we were before. We're not running around in an office, walking there and back from work, even from our car. There's so much more sedentary, and the day gets longer, and we lose track, and we don't go out for a walk, or we don't get in our workout first thing in the morning. So it's inevitable.
Yeah. Well, the fourth thing that you mentioned is plan for recovery. So I was reminded today that part of, you know, somebody was criticizing Strava, which is a way to keep track of your exercise.
It's the Facebook for athletes. That's what I call
it. Right. But it makes every training event a competition. Mm-hmm. And this person reminded me today, we've got to train to race, not race to train. Mm-hmm. So, you know, recovery is part of that. Even, you know, on our ride, sometimes in our run, sometimes we need to go slow, even though we don't want to. Does that relate to the work world as well? That we need to get good sleep, but are there days that we're okay to, you know, not, you know, be super productive and efficient? Like,
goof off the whole day. First, I'd like to say with technology, I do agree with Strava because I wish they would record or you would get points for doing, low intensity activities or resting or taking the day off, just like, you know, in your Apple Watch, you're reminded to get up and move and not sit all the time. So that should be a good balance. There should be goof off days. I have brain candy reading that I have. Usually when we used to travel, I used to get it on the plane or music for me is a really, really good recovery or restful, because it can be very motivating. It can be very relaxing. But I do believe that the breaks that we take where we're trying to still be quasi-productive, listening to a podcast or watching or listening to a TED Talk, that's not really real recovery. You really need to unplug.
Yeah.
I personally like to be outside in nature, or I like to go on a run with my friends, or I like the pool where your ears are under water and you're just moving your body. For me, that's just movement meditation. I know it's not recovery because it's movement. I'm not very good at sitting still, but I enjoy going on walks and listening to music.
That's what you and I have in common. You know, for me, relaxing is movement. Relaxing, sitting still it can be stressful.
Stretching and yoga classes. Yeah, for sure.
Just a reminder to folks listening, if you have any questions for Tatiana, let us know in the chat. We'd love to entertain those. The fifth and final point was, and I think this is the most important one for the executives that I work with, is lean on your team. Mm.
So key. We can't do it alone. We could go faster alone, but we'll go further with others, right? There's a Chinese proverb of that. You first should tell your team what you need, the type of support and the type of help that you need when you need it. And I'm not just talking about people in the work world, everyone around you. I think we've all consumed probably more alcohol at social hours with friends when you could just sit and just communicate or just share or just go back and forth and check in with one another. I'm talking about that team, the social side, and also the work world team, where you can share, that you can reprioritize and you decide what needs to happen. And remember, initially we started saying, is it good enough? What does a win look like? That's the team that will help you get there. It's hard to do that on your own. And I would also say, check in on one another. How is everyone feeling on the team? And how is everyone doing with everything else that we have going on in trying to be strong and be bouncing forward, not even bouncing back, as we move forward into this new reality called the post-COVID world?
Yeah. Well, the presumption I think you're making is that people have a team, that they've identified all these people. Let's go back and talk about, you know, how do you even know if you have the right team, advisors, group, and support? Because I work with a lot of executives that typify lonely at the top.
Yeah.
They don't have very many friends. They don't have very many confidants like they did when they were 20 years younger.
You know, but there's their circle of advisors. And first of all, their family or their strong personal team that can support them. And a friend doesn't have to be someone that they work with. They could be someone maybe they make it a point to talk to once a month, an advisor, I call it the advisory board. And by the way, they all don't have to know one another, but it is important to have people that sort of keep an eye out for you and help you accomplish your goal in a way, or a coach, like someone like you. As you said, I'm not going to put a number to it and say it has to be a certain number of people, but it's really important to have a support team.
Yeah. Yeah. And part of that, I'll just add, I mean, in order to take, to get help from other people,
you gotta
be a giver.
You have to. That's right. That's right. And you don't have to pay it back. You can always pay it forward, but you have to give. I agree. It's an energy exchange.
Right. And you know, I see that with executive teams all the time. You know, there'll be a great team, and there'll be the first one to raise their hand and say, anything you guys need, call me. I'll be there. But almost nobody will raise their hand and say, help.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know. I don't understand. I'm stuck. I'm frustrated. You know, because so often in the work world, that doing that is being vulnerable.
It's showing. And that's why leaders setting that tone at the top, starting meetings where they go around, what are your wins for the week? And what are you worried about? What are you struggling with? And setting and being the first to say, here's mine, allows for that to be communicated and allows for people to want to help one another versus just having bragathons where they talk about all their accomplishments. There's no way there's no struggles in the times that we live in.
Yeah, we interviewed Carol Robin on from Stanford, who teaches a touchy-feely class
yes,
at the graduate
yes.
school. And she was saying, you know, to start meetings by this, if you really knew me, you would know, boom, 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 boom,
mm-hmm.
that you start the meeting by really being vulnerable and saying, you know, hey, if you really knew me, you'd know, God, I'm scared to death about X, Y, Z, or I'm really nervous I'm not going to hit my number this quarter, or I just had another person quit, and now I feel like a big failure. I can't hire the right people. I mean, all that stuff. I mean, to put it out there.
Being transparent, absolutely, and making it clear. Now, you don't want it all to be about that. You want to show the leadership and saying, I'm excited about this. I'm unsure about this, struggling with this, but here's the direction we're moving towards. I agree very much.
Yeah. I saw another, I wish I kept track of my reading better so I could cite the reference appropriately. But I read something recently that the best thing that someone can do these days is to go for a walk with a close friend and uh-huh. basically talk about your problems.
Mm-hmm.
During a walk to talk about your problem or something you're struggling with. And you know, I've had some walking meetings over the years at work and boy, they seem to be a whole different, because in some ways, especially for us guys, it's
when
easier
you're not
to,
facing one another. I know what you're saying. Exactly. Yes.
Shoulder to shoulder, like walking like this, I don't have to look, you know,
yes,
I don't have to. Yeah. So these five things, are all things that, you know, most of us, I mean, we're all a work in progress, but these are five things that we can do that build our resilience, and not just through the latter stages of this pandemic, but into the future, into the next thing that comes our way.
Absolutely.
That's unexpected, right?
Absolutely. Mm-hmm.
And how do we, you know, if we feel, hey, we're doing okay, what can leaders do to sort of, you know, make their resilience contagious for other people?
I really believe in sharing stories and examples of, as you said, I struggled with this and then I saw this perspective, or next time I paid better attention to this and I can be better able to handle it. Sometimes before we ran through the wash cycle of 2020, we did say that in order to become more resilient, put yourself in some discomfort. And I do still believe that, even though the whole year of 2020 was uncomfortable, finding opportunities for them to continue to become more resilient, being in different situations and providing opportunities for everyone that wants to, or for others that need a break, that need a rest, that need recovery. Everyone needs something different, but they should be there to make those things available.
Well, it's interesting you say that. I mean, you're what I heard you say was, you know, don't be too comfortable. That you know, you've got to leave the zone of comfort here and there.
Yeah,
for growth.
That's kind of my motto, but that's what fuels me. You know, experience, excitement, growth. That's definitely how you grow.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, and that doesn't happen without mistakes and setbacks and failures.
Absolutely.
And,
Oh yes.
So that's, you know,
hence
we talk about all the time. Yeah. Well, we talk all the time about developing leaders, you know, without in the organization. It's like, well, that doesn't happen without creating an environment where people can mess up and learn.
Yeah. You know, that's the only teacher. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, even, you know, doctors are, you know, in through residency programs are trained to become great doctors under the tutelage of attendings who let them make, you know, keep their mistakes minimal because it's life and death, but they don't learn without screwing up here
without the challenges. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes.
It's called a teaching hospital.
Yes.
well, good. Well, this is awesome. Again, you've got 15, I have two more questions. You've got 15 courses out on LinkedIn Learning.
Yes.
I'm interested in two of them. What's the number one course that gets the most views? Most popular course you've got?
You know, the resilience course, Building Resilience, people find very practical, very applicable. And that's an older course. And lately, Communicating across cultures has been very popular. I'm writing one on virtual environments. How do you communicate across cultures? There's others. It's seasonal, as you know.
Yeah.
Being authentic, having an authentic pitch, talking about yourself, how you speak, that's also popular. But I have a newsletter called Stronger. I'm actually working on the next one. And it's really finding ways to perform better in the workplace. So it's usually adversity related.
Yeah. And that's why you and I connected.
Yeah.
And of all the courses you've done, is there one that's like, it hasn't caught on, but you're like, if more people knew about this one, I really think it's a good one, but it never caught on.
Yeah, I'll tell you which course, and I don't know why. It's my favorite because the whole thing is a scenario where Brenda and I are acting. It's called Communicating in Times of Change. So instead of we had developed the content, we were going to film it in front of the camera, and then we decided this is too boring. So we came up with a scenario where she's the wise advisor in the workplace. And of course, I'm the extroverted one and I come to her with my drama problem. And then as you follow the course, you learn kind of what you should do as you communicate change to your group while I do that. So we had a lot of fun with that. There were no red carpets and Oscars, unfortunately, but it's one of the most fun courses that we have filmed.
Yeah. Well, definitely filming courses will take anybody out of their comfort zone. So
talk about dealing with making mistakes with seven people standing in a room and they go, yes, let's do that again. Okay.
And again.
And again. And again. And again.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, good. Well, Tatiana, it was absolutely a pleasure being out with you. We'll have to do this again. And thanks. You know, you've just lived a life of service. I mean, you've taught at the university for years. You've created these courses.
Thank you.
You're trying to take all your experience and help others realize their full potential. What a noble pursuit you're in. So thank you.
Thanks for providing this platform to chat about it.
Oh, you're welcome. And hopefully next time we won't have any technical glitches at the beginning, but that's what makes it real in life.
That's it. Take care, everyone. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye-bye.